Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Student loan debt has topped $1 trillion at a time when recent grads face very poor job prospects. Texas Governor Rick Perry says he's got a solution, a $10,000 bachelor's degree. And he wants higher education to gear students toward jobs. He is pushing hard, and he's getting tough pushback. This hour On Point, a Texas showdown over the future of higher education. You can join us. Is it time to change how we educate? Would you sign up for a $10,000 degree? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Austin, Texas, is Reeve Hamilton. He covers higher education and politics for the Texas Tribune. Welcome to you, Reeve. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about Rick Perry's proposal, the governor's proposal for a $10,000 college degree. What kind of student is he trying to attract?
Well, he laid out this proposal in his State of the State address in 2011, and it's pretty broad. It was just a challenge to universities to create a $10,000 degree with sort of little direction on how to do that. Last time I checked with his office, they count 13 $10,000 degrees in the state so far, although that number is a bit questionable because some schools just use financial aid and student grants and fancy packages to get to the $10,000 level. And a lot of them route the student through, first you have to get significant college credit in high school and then go to community college and then get your degree. And so the type of student that would actually go through that path might not be your typical college-going student. So it's not clear exactly who these are for, but they are just sort of extra options out there now.
So here's some sound in a 2011 State of the State speech, Texas Governor Perry laying out his vision for this $10,000 bachelor's degree.
Today I'm challenging our institutions of higher education to develop bachelor's degrees that cost no more than $10,000, including textbooks.
And here he explains why.
Let's leverage those web-based instruction, innovative teaching techniques, and aggressive efficiency measures to reach that goal. Imagine the potential impact on affordability and graduation rates and the number of skilled workers that it would send into our economy.
So there's a lot behind this, Reeve Hamilton, and a lot of politics, a lot of strong personalities. Why did the governor choose to take on higher education in this way, do you think?
Well, he's been interested in higher education for a long time. You see that in his days as lieutenant governor. He was on a commission involved in it. But it's also an interesting point politically, and especially in Texas, which is virtually a one-party state. It is a place where the divide in the Republican Party can be really strongly felt. There's a feeling that, you know, some of these universities are wasteful arms of the government, and Governor Perry has certainly been eager to tamp down on wasteful government spending during his 13 years in office.
And so give us a flavor for the kind of uproar that this idea is generating in Texas.
Well, you hear a lot of pushback, especially from the alumni of University of Texas at Austin and Texas A&M University, our two flagship institutions. Now, it's not clear that the $10,000 degree, since it's not a requirement for any university, it's more of a push and an encouraged thing, that it's not clear that they would actually have to create a $10,000 degree. Other schools are doing that, but this push for a $10,000 degree is one more step in this ongoing battle and tension around the flagship universities in the state and those have been contentious for at least the last 2 years, going back a little further, and that's about, you know, is academic research worth our investment? You know, are we coddling professors too much and that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm, I see. So places like University of Texas, Austin, these sort of flagship big research centers, they're saying, well, we're open to the idea of a cheaper degree, but not necessarily at our school, not necessarily at our institution.
Right, right. They're very in favor of having more options for students. And they're working on cheap options too. The University of Texas at Austin just announced a partnership with edX, which provides these massive open online courses that are free for anyone but are not necessarily for credit. So they're also open to alternative avenues for higher education, but to get down to that $10,000 level, and we should note that, you know, in that sound clip you played, Perry said, including books, and none of the degrees yet have gotten to the $10,000 degrees, textbooks included level yet. But to get down to $10,000 and maintain the quality that UT Austin has, many people say that just can't be done.
So given that many private colleges charge, what, upwards of $200,000 for a four-year degree, what do you get for a $10,000 degree? Would a student ever actually meet with a professor? Is most of this online? I mean, what does it look like?
Well, I think the closest that Texas is coming to an actual $10,000 degree where they've actually rethought the model and are not just using fancy student aid packages is this degree that they're going to roll out this fall at Texas A&M Commerce. And that looks like it's competency-based advancement. So you move through the curriculum at your own speed, sort of as soon as you can prove that you've mastered something, you do that. Most of it's online, so you don't actually have to go on campus necessarily. So it's highly individualized. It's not exactly clear if you have, you might have an online community, but you might not have that traditional, you know, group of friends in a dorm hanging out together and talking about what you're learning in class.
So I should say that this is not an original Rick Perry idea per se. Isn't it true that Bill Gates actually started talking about this idea that higher education could cost much less? I mean, he threw out the figure $2,000 a year, didn't he?
Right, and so the governor says he read that and thought, well, if he's saying that you know, we can get it for that level, I'll just throw out $10,000 and maybe we can get it down there for starters. So no, it's not, and that's the thing, is that the governor hasn't laid out a specific plan. He's just said, I want you guys to reach this target, and we are slowly seeing people trying to come up with some way to do that, and the answers so far have been interesting, but maybe not quite there. We're not quite there yet.
You're not there yet. And so what other states are following up on Texas's lead?
Well, Florida, Rick Scott in Florida jumped on it very quickly and started demanding $10,000 degrees of his institutions. An assemblyman in California tried to push it. I mean, the idea struck a nerve. And you've seen, you know, higher education reform efforts have been very aggressive nationally in general. So this is just sort of one piece of that. But other states have been following suit.
Reeve Hamilton covers higher education and politics for the Texas Tribune. He spoke with me from Austin. Reeve, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joining me now from Houston, Texas, is Ray Bowen. He was president of Texas A&M University from 1994 through 2002. He initiated Vision 2020 to launch Texas A&M into the ranks of the top 10 best public universities by 2020. He is currently a distinguished visiting professor of mechanical engineering at Rice University. And he's a founding member and is on the executive committee of the Texas Coalition for Excellence in Higher Education, which has pushed back hard on the governor's proposal. Welcome to you, sir. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Jane.
So you were president of, well, it's our pleasure to have you. You were president of Texas A&M. As I said there, do you believe there's room for a cheaper alternative to higher education, maybe even a $10,000 a year degree at an institution like Texas A&M?
Yes, I think the most people in the state and people, in particular the professionals in higher education, are interested, somewhat skeptical in some dimensions of the ability to actually deliver the quality degree. But if a university would like to package some of its programs to meet this kind of goal, I think everyone is excited about it. I think Reeve has properly characterized the issues to maintain quality, to provide programs that are the right blend of online and on-campus. Necessarily, in my opinion, eliminates many kinds of programs. It'd be very difficult to have a science-based kind of program that's so important to so many aspects of the state. But the fact that the governor would like to have higher education think about that and keep control costs, I don't think anybody has a problem with that.
So what you're saying is it might be easier to do this, to have a $10,000 degree for some of your students, but not for all of them. Harder for science-based programs. right?
That's correct. So many of the programs require a campus presence. So many of them require infrastructure to support the expensive infrastructure to support the coursework. I think it's really not realistic, but to the extent that it can be done, and I think the secondary story is if it can drive down costs across the board or in certain selected programs, wonderful. So there's not a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is a sort of a parallel perception that came about from an earlier discussions that the governor had with our boards of regents and other campus leadership was that somehow the model, the 60, 70-year model that's been created across the country of large research universities that were contributing to the national defense, contributing to the economic development of our states, were no longer needed, particularly mm-hmm. not needed in Texas. And the concern about that and how that wrapped into some of the other initiatives of the governor were a great concern and caused a lot of conversation.
In fact, he said that it was it's clear that there is too much focus on, quote, ivory tower research, too little focus on teaching and keeping college affordable. You didn't like that so much.
No, I think no one would be surprised that I and a lot of people with my kinds of backgrounds don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that we're banged over the head and say, become better teachers and make your research more relevant to the national needs is not a problem. I think it comes from a number of different sectors of the federal government and the taxpayers. So mm-hmm. that's not a problem at all. The perception that this is an enormous problem, I think, is just simply wrong.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about a battle in Texas over the future of higher education. I have some sound here I want to play. Here's a first clip from University of Texas at Austin President Bill Powers. He's speaking in May 2011 about the importance of research universities.
The state of Texas needs not only large numbers of college graduates. It needs large numbers of graduates who have learned to thrive in the kind of educational environment that operates at the frontier of what is known and what is not yet known. The ability to produce these kinds of advanced degrees attracts business. It gives Texas the capacity to support innovation and advanced technology. It feeds the rest of the educational ecosystem.
And here he is talking about the future of public research universities.
We need to be careful about how we change. It's virtually impossible to simply change and innovate from the top down.
And so they're in the middle of change, at least in some form, in Texas. We're talking about that this hour. Our guest, Ray Bowen. He was president of Texas A&M University from 1994 through 2002. He initiated Vision 2020 to launch Texas A&M into the ranks of the top 10 best public universities by 2020. He's currently a distinguished visiting professor of mechanical engineering at Rice University. And joining me now is Tom Lindsay, director for the Center of Higher Education at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, which has been closely aligned with Republican Governor Rick Perry. He is former president of Scheimer College in Chicago and former provost and vice president for academic affairs at the University of Dallas. It's nice to have you with us, Tom. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me.
So you heard our first segment with Professor President Bowen. I know alarm bells are ringing among educators who say that a $10,000 education or even a pared-down college experience is not going to give young students today the traditional college experience that they need. And what's your answer to that?
Well, you know, this is a situation that's been going on across the country. And while it's interesting to talk about it as a Texas showdown, let me read a statement to you. It says, quote, "Taxpayers can't keep subsidizing higher and higher costs for higher education. Colleges must do their part to keep costs down, and it's our job to make sure that they do," unquote. Now, it wasn't Rick Perry who said that. It wasn't the Texas Public Policy Foundation. President Barack Obama said that in his State of the Union address just a couple of months ago. It was the second State of the Union address in which he addressed this issue. So the first point that your listeners need to know is that this isn't just a local issue, as interesting as that can be. The big issue is that higher education today faces a number of challenges that we need to address before they become a crisis. And the two major aspects of that are, first, declining student learning, and second, increasingly unaffordable college.
And so if we make education more affordable, do you see that this will open the floodgates then? Will America become a more educated country? And then is there a trade-off between the quality of education and accessibility and affordability?
Well, Jade, you know, going back to the 60s, it became a social goal for this country to increase access to near universal admission. Now, here in Texas, and we're not so different from other states, here in Texas, it's projected by the Lumina Foundation that by the year 2025, we're going to need 60% of our adult working population to have at least some sort of post-secondary degree or certificate. Currently in Texas, we're at 33%, and the projections are that at the current pace, we'll only get to 38% by 2025. So if we're going to increase both access and student success, we're going to have to find a way to lower the costs of higher education. It's simply unavoidable. With a $17 trillion national debt, with state budgets suffering, the only approach left, if we're going to give young people their shot at the American dream, is to lower the cost of college.
And while many people certainly want to do that, many also say, well, I have a little bit of concern that, you know, some of America's great public universities will turn into look more like trade schools or job corps.
You know, an important point for your listeners needs to be made right now. When Governor Perry made his State of the State address challenge in 2011, what he said was his goal was that 10% of college degrees satisfy the $10,000 requirement. Not all of them. And that, unfortunately, has been lost, and it's led to misunderstanding. And it's also distracted from the fact of what we'll call today the new normal in higher education. We know the phrase the new normal when we think of the straitened economic circumstances in which we find ourselves today. But the new normal in higher education is this. Today, according to one study, only 15% of students are going to the traditional four-year college where they're going full-time and not working full-time. Instead, the new majority, the majority of students seeking post-secondary degrees or certificates today are what we call non-traditional students. And I guess we should probably stop calling them that since they're the new majority. And by that, what we mean is that the majority of students seeking some sort of college degree or certificate today are either over 25 or working full-time and or have families of their own to support. Now, again, if we're going to fulfill the dream of near universal access, we're going to have to find a way to make it affordable for those students, because really the future prosperity of Texas depends on it, and I would say the future prosperity of the United States.
So what do you say to President Bowen's point that, you know, this will work for some degrees, but it's hard to have a science-based program where you got to be hands-on, you got to be conducting experiments, you got to be in the classroom, you got to be building robots if you're in a STEM, you know, it's hard to do that in a $10,000 a year program. What do you say to that?
Well, first I want to commend former President Bowen, because it was refreshing to hear, and it's a hopeful sign that, I mean, he recognizes, as do we all, Republicans and Democrats, Governor Rick Perry, President Barack Obama, that we've got to bring down the cost, that we've got to be more accountable. And I would be worried about the effect on quality were it not for the fact that the governor limited his challenge to 10% of college degrees.
President Bowen, would you jump in here? What are your thoughts?
I think his clarification is helpful. I think the average person on the street doesn't really understand the narrow window that the governor is shooting for, and I would hope that the policymakers would talk more about that. I think it could be useful. One of the things that I think in the context you have to keep in mind is that this country sort of made a social contract with its research universities, its public research universities, after World War II. And they made an investment in them over the next several generations in order to sort of aid the country economically, in order to aid the country in difficult times where scientists and engineers need to be available to the nation for its own self-defense. This was a World War II lesson. Old as it is, it's still important today. Because of that, we have around our country now 100 or so very high-quality public research universities that are important to the economic engine of our nation. And while Tom's description of issues are important and certainly should not be diminished at all, this is another one which has to be retained. So like so many things in our nation, we have to find a balance. We have to find a way to protect our core values and core interests, access for all, accommodating the modern environment of young people in our nation, but also maintaining the quality of these public institutions and associated private institutions to sort of help maintain the economic engine of our nation. All this stuff has to be done. It's complex, but everybody knows that.
President Bowen, what do you say to Governor Perry and his supporters who suggest that you, broadly speaking, have gone too far in the direction of research at the expense of students? They say, for example, that reassigning some of these research-focused faculty to teach more could cut tuition in half. It would decrease class sizes. It would boost completion rates. That there are ways around this, but it would change the sort of the traditional way that we do things. What's your response to that?
Well, I'd like to see the numbers. I've always been had questions about the accuracy of that information. The idea, though, that a policymaker like the governor in an important position would say that and challenge the leadership of our universities to defend their position is entirely healthy and entirely reasonable from a public policy standpoint. If you look at the university I know the most about, Texas A&M, their teaching loads are rather high. All my years as president, they were some of the highest in the state. If that information provided by the state coordinating board is in fact correct, that suggests that either our loads are quite heavy or in fact they're quite low at the 43 other public universities in our state. I don't think that's the case. So I think the issue is important. It ought to be discussed. I think at the end of the day, the public would find that the people at our public universities are investing the kind of energy that we would expect to be invested to educate our young people for the next generation.
Tom Lindsay, jump in.
Yeah, no, you asked for numbers. And if you look at the work of Ernest Boyer on this, he did surveys of faculty, and he found that 21% of faculty in 1969 strongly agreed with the statement that, quote, in my department, it is difficult for a person to achieve tenure if he or she does not publish. 20 years later, the number of professors agreeing with that statement had doubled. And moreover, and I think this is the bigger issue, because, again, this isn't a Texas problem. It's not a UT or an A&M problem. This is a national problem. Boyer also found that the real problem is that the model of the German research institution, which we began to emulate over 100 years ago, I mean, that's fine for the select R1 institutions, but that ethos, and with it a decline of teaching, has spread widely beyond the research university at otherwise institutionally diverse four-year colleges. Massey and Zemsky refer to this as the academic ratchet, and what they mean by that is this, and I'm quoting from them. They say, even when most faculty use their time to meet professional and institutional obligations, the academic ratchet still shifts output from undergraduate education toward research, scholarship, professional service, and similar activities, a process that Massey and Zemsky in their study call output creep. Now, you know, why is that an issue? You know, the 10% requirement for $10,000 degrees is in no way going to affect the research output of our R1 institutions. But, you know, there was a landmark national study done in 2011, published by the University of Chicago Press by the title of Academically Adrift. And what it found should give all of us in education pause. It surveyed students from public and private institutions across the country, and it tracked them for 4 years. And it found that 36% of today's college students across the country, after 4 years in college, show no statistically significant increase in fundamental academic skills, by which they mean critical thinking, complex reasoning, and writing skills. In my view, that's a national scandal, and we really need to address this if we're going to maintain America's competitiveness and also if we're going to produce college students who turn out to be effective and informed citizens and future leaders.
Tom, let's get a call in here from Don. He's in Amherst, New York. Don, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thanks. And this actually follows nicely on that last comment. I think the issue is not just how to make colleges better, which I think if you want a $10,000 bachelor's degree, the most logical way to do that is heavy subsidies. But it's more about how to make something better than colleges. If someone suggested to you, hey, let's put a few thousand or several thousand or tens of thousands, 18 to 22-year-olds together and have someone talk to them about calculus for an hour and then have them shift and go off and have someone else talk to them about the Battle of Hastings for another hour, you wouldn't think that's a good idea. So I think we need to fundamentally rethink what education looks like, not only at the higher education level, but K-12.
Don, thank you. I'm glad you called. President Bowen, would you speak to that point? Would you speak to Don's point about, you know, the only way to do this is to heavily subsidize change? Do you agree with that?
I think in some sectors this is true. I think one of the underutilized resources within the higher education spectrum are the small state-supported regional universities that tend to be left out of this conversation about the quality of the education, the long-term benefits of education, and those kinds of things. They have a slightly different mission. They're not as expensive. Some of them are, at least in our state, which I'm more familiar with, are quite good universities. And I think if you took a holistic look at higher education and assigned each sector in a consistent way its role in mission, I think you could, in fact, justify more subsidy. You could, in fact, see greater outcomes from that, and it'd be a better managed enterprise. So much of the rhetoric in our state, and I think this is true elsewhere, not just picking on the people that live here, acts as if there are two universities, two public universities, my old university and the University of Texas in Austin. And that overlooks an enormous resource, enormous output of students that go to graduate school, go to work, and make real contribution to our state. The investments the state has made, and regrettably because of the realistic economic problem, these investments have become more difficult to obtain. These investments have paid off, and I would hope the state would evolve to a situation where they could increase those investments. And they may not need to be at my university and University of Texas at Austin. May need to be elsewhere.
I guess the concern among many listeners, as I'm reading here, is, you know, you have two tiers of education. If this kind of moves forward in the way that we're hearing here, you can have a $10,000 degree and you can also have elite schools, but those are really safe for people who can afford them. Is that a concern, Tom Lindsay?
Well, is it better to have students unable to go to college and to be able to afford to finish college? You know, right now, 50% of students who start college, they never complete it, and oftentimes that's for economic reasons because they have to work full time. And as I said earlier, support families. The students that are over 25 who can't afford to go to a four-year college, we're talking about the past if we're talking about the model of the traditional four-year institution. Because, as I said, already only 15% of students fit that category. So if we're going to meet the needs of the future, we're going to have to adopt new modes. Now, Don's point about restructuring education, in a sense, that's starting to happen with the work of online learning and interactive technology. But, you know, there are things we can do now that don't cost any more money. What I've tried to propose here in Texas in the legislature are measures that avoid micromanaging universities and that instead simply ask them to be more transparent about the effects of what they do. One of the bills would try to bring to light what I regard as the national scandal of grade inflation. In the 1960s, 15% of grades were A's. Today, an A is the most common grade given in college. 43% of grades are A's. Mm. That eats away at the essence of an institution. And that's something we can address without having to spend a dime.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about the battle over higher education in Texas, and you can join us, listeners. Is it time to rethink? Higher education is a much cheaper degree, the way forward. We're talking with Ray Bowen this hour. He was president of Texas A&M University from 1994 through 2002. He initiated Vision 2020 to launch Texas A&M into the ranks of the top 10 best public universities by 2020. He's currently a distinguished visiting professor of mechanical engineering at Rice University. And also with us, Tom Lindsay, director for the Center for Higher Education at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, which has been closely aligned with Republican Governor Rick Perry on this issue. He's a former president of Scheimer College in Chicago and a former provost and vice president for academic affairs at the University of Dallas. I have some sound here I want to play. Here's Rick Scott from Florida announcing his plan for the $10,000 college degree. Here he is in Florida.
The goal of this program is to figure out how we can do what the private sector has done, keep the cost down, but also make sure we focus on where there's jobs, where there's degrees.
So what about this idea of jobs, Tom Lindsay? Are you the issue of employability? Are you matching students up with industry as you think about a $10,000 a year bachelor's degree? Is that part of the calculus here?
Well, for those students who've already identified a business that satisfies their passion to which they want to go, there are degrees available now among the 13 schools that have $10,000 degrees that will allow them to do that. So I think that, for some students who have an idea already of what they want to do, this is an option. And as we've already seen here, looking at the non-traditional students are the new majority of college students, for some of them that may be the only option.
Professor Bowen, what about the element of actually employing these young college graduates after they spend so much money to get their degrees? Do you think universities are focused enough on actually getting them jobs?
I think universities can always do more. I come from a university that has a wonderful track record in providing opportunities for employment. The key to all of that, regardless of what university you attend, whether it's regional or comprehensive university, is the quality of the program. You have to prepare people to provide the talents necessary to in our modern economy. This involves a lot of dimensions. Sometimes it's scientific, sometimes it's social, sometimes it's historical. You have to provide well-rounded people. Once you do that, then you have to provide access in terms of placement services on campus, a great environment for companies to come, and that takes a while to do that. And efforts that universities have made, I think, have generally been good. They can always do better. And the idea that there should be a matching, not rigidly, but a connection between the kinds of programs people are trained in, prepared in, the kinds of things they look for jobs in, that's fine. But keep in mind that not all young people go to work after they have four years of education. Some of them pursue careers in graduate school. They go to law school. They go to medical schools. They go to other professional kinds of programs. And at that point, they make the transition into the job market.
But I would respectfully say that a lot of students do want to work, and frankly, they can't find a job.
It is a serious problem in our nation, and I think a lot of the things we're talking about today have their roots in the weak economy in our country, and you can't diminish the importance of that. The young people that are underutilized even and have jobs, but in fact are not reflective of the kind of training that they've had. Hopefully, our country will evolve past that long term, and I sort of put my hat on as a person interested in science policy long term. Our nation's ability to innovate, our nation's ability to create new products, new services, new kind of disciplines which create an economic environment like we've done historically, mm-hmm. I think is going to be an important thing for the country to support. That requires a certain kind of university that's not necessarily the same as the kind Tom is justifiably interested in for that he's described so well.
What do you think it is? What kind of university is that?
I think my bias is that you have to have universities that train people in the absolute fundamentals. People have to understand their nation they live in, their history, their culture. They also have to understand the economic environment, the kinds of skills that are necessary, whether it's a technical, social, or what have you. Most universities I know try to do that. We have universities that are four-year vocational schools, mm-hmm. that teach people very specific technical skills, mm-hmm. And their communities need those because of the unique nature of the job environment.
And Tom Lindsay, your proposal wouldn't do that?
No, quite the contrary. That mischaracterization ignores the fact that for 30 years I've been speaking and writing about what I regard deplorable decline in a core curriculum. And unfortunately, contrary to what you've just heard, most universities are not requiring that. A study by the nonpartisan American Council of Trustees and Alumni shows that only 2% of universities today require a common core curriculum of the liberal arts and sciences. In my view, this is absolutely indispensable because universities have a higher purpose than job training. So, you know, the objection now that as the public and with it politicians are becoming more concerned with job training, in effect here, you know, I was a professor of the humanities for 20 years. We in the humanities and social sciences have to admit some guilt in that because by dismantling a required core curriculum, we sent out the message that this stuff is not as important as previous generations thought it was. Mm. And so the public is looking at this, and I mean, look at the Pew Research Center survey. 57% of prospective students think the college does not deliver a value worth the cost. 75% that think that college is simply unaffordable. And, you know, as far as the employability concern, I mean, politicians are simply reflecting public concern over the fact that today, 37% of recent college graduates are underemployed, meaning they have jobs and only require a high school degree or less. And this is a trend that's been going. This isn't just simply a product of today's economy. This has been going on for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. In 1970, 1% of cab drivers had a college degree. Today, 15% do. In 1970, 10% of college graduates were underemployed, meaning had a degree, had a job that didn't require a college degree. In 1980, that went up to 16%. 1990 went up to 17%.
I hear the trend. See it. And I'm going to interrupt you because I got to get some listeners in here. They've been waiting a long time. Let me get Lee in first from Houston, Texas. Lee, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, Jane. This is Lee from Houston. I went through Texas A&M. I have a bachelor's of science degree in journalism, although now I'm actually in IT security. But just to give you an interesting information, when I went, and it's been quite a while ago, when I started at Texas A&M at Galveston and transferred to College Station, lived at home 2 years, I was paying about $170 for 12 hours. By the time I graduated, it was $700 for 12 hours of classes at Texas A&M, the main campus. Mm-hmm. Part of the issue was A&M figured out that it was cheaper for many out-of-state students to go in to go out of state in Texas than it was in state in their own states. But there has been a direct relationship between increases in tuition in Texas and decreases in funding from the states. There's somewhat of an anti-intellectual backlash in some areas, and states don't want the educated workforce because they're not willing to fund it. Mm-hmm. I've got a 16-year-old son at home. I'm scared to death about what he's going to have to face as far as tuition costs, and it's because the states have decided it was not a priority. Mm. Thank you.
Lee, thank you very much, and good luck down there. Bill's on the line now from Rhode Island, Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Bill, welcome. Hello.
Yes, Jane, thank you. Mm-hmm. I just have a couple of one major question is, how do you get a college education down to $10,000? And I think the only way that you do that is by a heavy reliance upon use of computers, and the question is who is going to gain in a system like that? We're already seeing this in the public schools in the K-12, where you've got a lot of money interest in the so-called reform movement, and it sounds to me like that's what we're headed for with colleges, and particularly when you have people like Governor Perry of Texas and Governor Scott of Florida. Just look at where they have been moving towards in public education, K-12, and I think this is a logical extension of that into colleges. Who's going to be making out? Who are the corporate people that are going to be making money off these highly computerized based programs? And I think that's the only way you get to $10,000.
Bill, thank you. Here's another call from Jeff in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Jeff, welcome. Hello.
Hi, Jane. Hey, I just wanted to make two quick questions here. One, I went to a community college here in Oklahoma City. It was Oklahoma State University at Oklahoma City. They provided me with a computer science degree, and it cost me under, I think, like $4,500, including books, to get that degree. And I'm able to get, I have a job currently that I make more than most people I know that has a bachelor's degree. And two, especially in Texas, where you have University of Texas at Austin and then Texas A&M, they have these huge football programs that make $1 million for the school. Could that be used to subsidize this kind of degree that we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, thank you. Two good points. Let's see. Tom Lindsay, we'll turn to you. It looks like Jeff went to community college in Oklahoma City. Very focused on job placement, talking about a model for something larger. Sounds like it's something you're thinking about as well, Tom.
Well, as we said here, for at least 10% of the population, there's a real demand for that. And we know from the polling data, there's a demand by more than 10%. But, you know, this is a great opportunity here to address a myth that has become very public. And so we have a chance to make news here on NPR. The notion that tuitions have increased because of the decline in state funding. Here are the facts. According to the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, whose responsibility it is to compile these statistics, if we look at the period of the last 10 years, 02 to 12, across Texas public higher education, what we find is, yes, as a matter of fact, state funding has declined 10%. But that's only a very small part of the story, because during that same 10-year period, university tuitions collected increased 115%. Moreover, fees, which are backdoor ways of increasing revenue without looking like tuition's going up, fees went up 61%. So the real truth here is this. There has been a mild decline in state funding that has been accompanied by a wild increase in university spending and therewith tuition.
Tom, how does your approach and Governor Rick Perry's in Texas, this $10,000 bachelor degree, how does it compare to how other fast-rising countries like China, like India, are thinking about education?
Well, online learning is spreading across Asia and Europe. And, you know, one of your earlier callers raised the question about, well, who's going to profit from this? Who's into online learning? Well, Harvard's into it. MIT is into it. They formed what's called edX. University of Texas at Austin joined edX recently. Stanford is into it. So again, to try to boil this down to just simply a Texas phenomenon really misses the fact that this is a worldwide phenomenon. We are witnessing a transformation in higher education, and we'd better recognize that if we're going to do justice to our students who are going to need to have some sort of post-secondary degree if they're going to have any chance of succeeding.
President Bowen, our last caller, Jeff, also wanted to talk about football programs that generate massive amounts of revenue, and he asked, could some of that money be funneled to reduce tuition?
Somehow I wish you'd ask Tom that question. I'll answer it and give you my best response, but I want to speak to Tom's last comment, because I think that there's a fascinating investigation that needs to take place, you know, concerning his assertions. Last spring, the National Science Foundation that publishes biannually a thing called Science and Engineering Indicators. It's a compendium of data collected around the country and around the world about the scientific and technical engineering education environment in our nation. They looked at public research universities and have very specific numbers about the decline in funding from those universities and the corresponding, in some cases, and proportional increase in tuition. Tom may, no doubt, is correct in his numbers, but I think the presentation of the data in that particular report is revealing, because it points out there's been an enormous increase in enrollment at our public universities in around the country, in particular in Texas, and the funding per student, the kind of money you take into the classroom, has gone down substantially in the last several years. Arguably, the deregulation of tuition that took place in Texas should have been watched more closely by policymakers, boards of regents, and people who run the universities. But that was created as a social contract between the legislature and the universities, realizing the state was confronting some very difficult and real budget problems. So I believe the information about the relationship between tuition increases and state appropriation that Tom provided won't stand the scrutiny suggest to the audience they look at that particular report.
Can I respond to that?
Football is, may I answer my part?
Okay, go ahead. We're running out of time here, so quickly, please.
Football is a big issue. They're masterful in spending their income. Some of the programs are financially so strong that they do support their universities in various ways. Most are not. Most of them are losing money. And I'll shut up at that.
All right. Tom Lindsay, go ahead.
Yeah, this issue about the increase in university spending, this was just addressed when I testified before the House a couple of weeks ago on this issue. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board members are on a per-student basis, meaning they take account of the fact that there has been a significant increase in the student population. And taking that into account, the facts remain a 115% increase in tuitions collected and a 61% increase in fees collected, whereas there has only been a 10% drop in state funding per student per year.
So last point here before we close, a $10,000 degree. Tom Lindsay, do you see this as the higher education of the future?
I see it as a wonderful avenue for those students who can't get a college education in any other way. And I'm happy to see this developing, because if we're not able to educate non-traditional students, our whole economy is going to suffer.
And how do you see it, President Bowen?
I think his summary is dead right. To any extent you can reduce the cost, that should happen. If there's a place for a 10,000 degree that's of quality, that provides preparation for later life, whether it be graduate school, whether it be the workplace, go for it. It's wonderful. I think the governor's constraint of 10% is perhaps quite realistic.
Well, thank you very much for a really interesting, insightful conversation, President Ray Bowen, formerly of Texas A&M University. I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you for allowing me to be here.
And Tom Lindsay, Director of the Center for Higher Education, Texas Public Policy Foundation. Thank you very much for your time and ideas. Appreciate it, Tom.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.